Good afternoon, listeners. Good afternoon, gardeners. You're with Karen and Selena today on Garden Planet.
Hello, everyone.
Hi. We are going to be talking today about companion planting and also books about gardening, magazines, all the stuff that you might want to have a read of over winter when you can't get outside.
Yep.
And some inspiring books and things there.
So. That's right, listeners. It might be time to get off Netflix for an hour and pick up some gardening books.
Exactly.
Because Selena and Karen told you to. All right, so we've got a massive topic today, Selena.
Yes, where do we begin?
Well, companion planting. I'm not sure if everyone is aware of what that is. I've got a definition of it here, which I found on Wikipedia, and it says companion planting in gardening and agriculture is the planting of different crops in proximity for any of a number of different reasons.
Well, what are all these different reasons? Are there heaps?
Yes, there is actually. Yeah. I was aware of two.
Okay. Well, let's start with one.
Yeah. The pest control, pollination, those were the two actually at the forefront, which I knew.
Yeah.
Providing habitat for beneficial insects, maximising use of space, and otherwise increasing crop productivity. There's a bit of a history to companion planting, which is why this could be a big topic.
Okay.
Could be a part two to this. And it was actually happening 8,000 years ago, apparently. Now, indigenous peoples of America. And have you ever heard of the Three Sisters technique?
Yes, I have it.
I was so excited to come across this.
Yeah,
well, I love history, but also history and gardening all combined. I was in heaven.
So explain.
Well, it's the Three Sisters technique, which 8,000 years ago. I mean, that's
prehistoric.
Pre-BC. So a long time ago, and they used three plants, squash, maize, corn, and beans.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is the older sisters, they are called, referred to as the corn.
Mm-hmm.
They offer the beans their needed support because beans, as listeners you know, will like to climb.
Right, yep.
So the beans, the corn's referred to as the older sister, the tallest, the one that supports. The beans are referred to as the giving sister.
Mm.
And this is because beans, being a legume, right, pull nitrogen from the air and bring it to the soil, and that benefits all three of the plants.
Ah, okay.
So it fertilises, right, nitrogen.
Yeah.
And then as the beans are growing through the tangle of the squash vines, squash is also pumpkin.
Melons.
Anything that grows on the ground with all the vines all going everywhere. And they will wind their way up the corn stalks into the sunlight, and then they will hold the sisters together.
Ah, okay.
So it's almost forming a trellis.
Yeah.
And then the large leaves of the squash will protect the threesome by creating living mulch that shades the soil, keeping it cool and moist and preventing weeds. And then with the prickly squash leaves, this also keeps away larger pests.
Mm.
They don't like to step on them.
Yep.
Ouch. So, very interesting. Almost quite keen to try that. Mm. I just don't have the space. For that kind of... But, if you do have that luxury.
A bit, to me, like a similar idea in permaculture called polycultures. A polyculture is...
The opposite of monoculture.
Maybe two or more different plants that will grow together, and they call them guilds. And usually it's used to refer to, like, fruit trees and their companion plants.
Oh, okay.
So your first mention of why we do companion planting is to have beneficial insects, well, pollination for the fruit trees.
Yeah.
So you'd grow things covering the ground, like, say, alyssum or some herbs with flowers to attract the bees to the fruit trees.
Yeah.
And also plants like comfrey that will mine the minerals from the soil, giving it to the fruit trees.
Reason being, listeners, is comfrey. I'm pretty sure I've mentioned this a dozen times already, but it's one of my favourite plants ever. It's got that long taproot.
Yeah.
That digs deep into the soil and pulls up those nutrients up to those more shallow-rooted plants.
Yeah.
And then that will feed them. Mm. So interesting, isn't it? It's just...
And the leaves can be used for mulch. And what else? You can use them in compost. And, yeah, they'll shade out the weeds.
Oh, yeah. I'm going on about one of my... I'm pretty sure I mentioned Dee almost every session. She's just so cool.
Dee is a lady that does workshops?
Yeah. She's a gardening consultant and writer in New Zealand.
Okay.
She actually, just because you were talking about the plants, suitable companion plants for under orchard trees, she recommends calendulas, nettle.
Oh, yes.
The old nettle. I know a lot of people wouldn't like it. If you're not sure what stinging nettle is, if you don't know what it is, that's probably a good thing. Nah, I don't mind it. Just be careful. It's got a real sharp sting to it, but it's such a great plant.
Yeah.
So medicinal and great for companion planting. Just be careful. It can get out of hand, but so can comfrey. Borage, phacelia, you mentioned alyssum, chickweed and chamomile. Now, she said it's advisable that you don't interfere with the tree root structures. And you get some citrus trees are more sensitive because their roots are shallower.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's any other trees. Can you?
Okay. Yeah, they are shallow. I'm not sure about the other trees.
Yeah, definitely no citrus ones. So she said use a gentle ground cover companions like alyssum, chickweed or chamomile.
Yeah.
Because they're aren't going to interfere as much with the tree's roots. So, and she said also comfrey, as you also mentioned, great for inhibiting weeds, getting too close to the tree. Fine example, kaikuyu grass.
Kaikuyu.
My favourite. But, she actually mentioned that, this is a year ago, maybe, I'm busy in the community garden working my way around the boundary there.
Yes.
I don't know if you haven't been down there for a while, but planting comfrey all around the boundary there. So I've done about 3 metres so far and I've got about 50 to go.
Good on you. I've trained your hand at some stage.
The wounds to prove it.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. We'll see how that goes. I'll keep you posted on... I mean, obviously, if it gets to, 20 metres down and it's not as effective as I thought it would be, I'll let you know.
Okay.
This is a bit of an experiment for me.
Hope it keeps out the kaikuyu. Really.
Mm, so do I.
The plants that also repel insects or are sort of, they have a smell that will stop insects from... going there, like lavender and rosemary.
There's a word for that, Selena.
Oh, I didn't have
it
word.
Is called, where did I see that? Pest suppression. Some companion plants help prevent pest insects or pathogenic fungi from damaging a crop through chemical means.
Oh, yes. And sometimes you don't need to plant them right next to where you want them to help. You can just chop and drop the leaves and just use them as mulch.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll still work, so... good, useful plants to have, sage and rosemary and lavender, the types of aromatic ones.
Yes, marigolds are supposed to release some sort of scent or chemical that deters aphids.
Yes. And
you can't have a garden without marigolds.
And nematodes, they say that they're very good. So I've heard someone say that you plant them, just plant them everywhere in your
Is that a herb or a flower?
No,
flower?
Nematodes are these insect in the soil that can eat your plants.
Oh, right. Sorry, so you're saying that's another insect that these chemicals deters.
Oh,
okay.
So especially for potatoes, plant marigolds with potatoes.
Oh, okay.
And it'll stop them from getting
diseased. Is that a common potato pest?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
And are they the ones that sort of leave little nibble marks on your potatoes?
Yeah, so they go under the soil. So they have this smell that sort of repels them, so I thought, in our community garden, we've put in a lot of herbs and flowers. Not because we eat them so much. It's just... Yeah, to help all the other vegetables and fruit, you know, grow better. So, and also they look lovely too.
Yeah. And so there's... What I found with the companion planting, I actually discovered 7 reasons, or they call them mechanisms. So we've discussed, what was the first one? Pollination, obviously. Pollination encouragement.
Mm-hmm.
That was number 6 on my list. Because obviously pollination in the garden is always encouraged.
Yeah.
I think that's a big factor for our community garden. We've got so many flowers growing in there.
Yeah.
Well, I don't... Yeah, I reckon there is.
Yeah.
I think it really helps. And reason why it helps is I found this on the Tui Gardening website, mm-hmm. this information. For instance, capsicums and eggplants, for those listeners that aren't aware, they have quite small flowers.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they really benefit from having flowers, say like a marigold with a really simple, bold flower, bright colour, nearby, because that... does the job of, well, ensures
attracting.
That they, yeah.
Yeah.
So it sort of does that job for them.
Okay.
Attracting the bees. So. And there's other bee-friendly plants you could put in your garden, in your veggie garden. Sunflowers.
Yep.
Poppies, clover. Oh, I found some really interesting information on clover, which we can get into if you want. Nasturtiums, Queen Anne's lace. I don't know what that, you'd know what that is.
Yep. It's kind of like a lacy type. Flower, really good for bees. Yeah.
Echinacea, and of course borage.
Borage, yeah.
Blue tansy, purple tansy.
Phacelia.
There's a blue tansy though.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's that. Then you've got number 5 was protective shelter, wind breaks or shade. Even down to plant fortification. Now, what do you know about foxgloves? This is the quiz of the day.
Good to plant around apple trees, apparently.
Foxgloves, according to the Tui Gardening New Zealand website, have a growth-stimulating effect on all plants.
Oh.
Who would have thought? I don't have any foxgloves, but I've heard a lot about them.
Yeah, I've tried to put them around my fruit trees to see what will happen.
Yeah.
So.
They protect the garden from disease and strengthen tender plants.
Well, they are medicinal as well,
The foxgloves. Everyone used herbs back in the day when they were, before the pharmaceutical companies, they were the medicine. Foxglove, I believe, was used for heart conditions.
Yes. Mm. Yeah.
And then you've got your beneficial predator recruitment. That's also to do with... pollen, but here's a good one. So basically, I'll just read it. Companion plants that produce a lot of nectar or pollen may encourage higher populations of some beneficial insects, which control pests, and this is because their larvae feed on them. Now, did you get that? I had to read that one quite a few times there.
Okay, so they attract the predator.
Yeah,
insects.
So you've got your, say let's take a marigold. I'll give you an example. I think examples are always a great way of just explaining it. Example, marigolds, mm-hmm. once again, attract hoverflies. I'm not sure, do we have hoverflies in New Zealand?
Yeah, we do.
I'm not sure that was an American thing.
Yeah.
Whose larvae are predators of the aphids.
Yeah.
So it's not the actual hoverfly, what they were saying, that's eating the aphids. It's their larvae. So they go, nest in this marigold, produce larvae. And then the larvae feeds on the aphids.
Oh, okay. Yep. Interesting.
It was. It was very interesting.
How about decoy plants? That's a similar thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
They say nasturtium can be one of these decoy plants.
Yeah.
Where all the nasty insects that will eat your crops will go on to the nasturtium instead of eating your crops.
Yeah.
So provide them with food so that they'll go to that one instead of the ones that you want to eat.
I found, it's so interesting. Yeah, they call that trap cropping
or
in Wikipedia.
Sacrificial plant. Yeah.
Yeah. Calendulas are referred to, this is what Dee was saying, as a trap plant. because they actually trap. They're quite sticky.
They are
seed head, and they trap insect plants. Insect pests such as the green shield beetle in their seed heads, and then they're trapped in there. So she calls it the trap plant. Oh. And so it's really important to inhibit their life cycle to cut off the seed heads.
Right. So
and
she's
then you just, like, throw out the beetles.
She's
in
not mentioning Venus flytrap.
A fine example. Just take it whole, boom. And so the decoy thing, that's really interesting. That is another term for that is called host finding disruption, which sounds very technical. But get this. Studies have shown that flying pests are far less successful if their host plants are surrounded by any other plant, even decoy plants or artificial plants. or any other green material.
Oh.
So studies have shown it.
Okay.
There you go. There is a, it's quite technical, but I'll just give you one of the studies. It was shown that clover used as a ground cover had the same disruptive effect on 8 pest species from 4 different insect orders. That's quite technical. Anyway, the experiment showed that 36% of cabbage root flies laid eggs beside cabbages growing in bare soil. So on the cabbage leaves.
Yeah.
And that resulted in no crop.
Yeah.
Right, because they will go for it. You know how it goes. Compared to only 7% beside cabbages growing in a clover crop. So they were surrounded by clover.
Yeah.
Which was led to a good crop.
Wow.
Because they went for the clover.
Well, I've got written down, don't have bare soil because the insects have nowhere to go except your crops if it's just bare all around.
Well, this is totally, I don't know if you want to add to that, to do with the host finding disruption. There is a host plant finding process in which the insect actually assesses the plant's overall suitability by flying from leaf to leaf, accumulating sufficient stimuli from the host plant. If it makes sufficient inappropriate landings, if it makes sufficient appropriate landings, it will make a positive assessment, deeming the plant suitable to lay eggs. The converse occurs if the assessment is negative. So if you're giving it plastic plants or any other plant to land on first, and it goes, every insect has its own sort of thing, but it goes through a count.
Yeah.
And then if it counts, oh, no, that's not the right leaf and smell. Oh, no, that's not the right leaf and smell. And then it just goes away.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So isn't that, so there's an actual science behind
science.
It. So that's how it works.
Interesting you say that, Karen, because when I was gardening for retirement villages, we always had to garden roses, right?
Yes.
And roses are traditionally planted in a bed with no other plants around them, just roses.
That is certainly
soil.
The traditional, and they do look gorgeous alone. Like,
nothing else.
I get that, yeah.
And so these roses start getting diseases all the time, which is really, really bad.
Yeah.
Because then you have to spray them and...
They require quite heavy pesticide use, don't they, when grown like that?
So what are good companions for roses? Well, one really good companion for roses is onions and garlic.
Oh, right.
Like the garlic family, because it repels the aphids.
Mm-hmm.
And another one is salvias, which might just be like one of those decoy plants you mentioned.
Yeah.
But the thing with onions and garlic, they have that special property in them that the aphids don't like.
Yeah.
You can even make sprays out of.
So did you manage to convince the retirees to go garlic?
The thing was, they had this bed sort of, one of the beds that they had with roses, they had standard roses, and it was infested with onion weeds.
Yeah.
But my contract company told me that I had to, like, hoe the onion weed, and they didn't want it.
Mm.
But I was like, but onion weed's really good for the roses.
Yeah, yeah.
And plus, you can eat onion weed.
And the flower's cute, too.
Yeah. I just did not understand why I had to do this...
I can understand that role would have been incredibly challenging at times. The commercial, it's Yes. It's a crazy world.
I was, once a commercial gardener for about 18 months.
Yeah.
And I don't think I would do it again. But
it was an experience. Yeah. Absolutely. And it's an eye-opener, isn't it, as to...
Yeah. But the thing is, they wanted it all tilled and covered with bark mulch, which does not let any other sort of plants grow.
Yeah.
So it would look good.
Yes.
But
yes.
Aesthetics aren't the only...
Right. And that's what I say when people, wander around my garden, I just say, look, it's not a bed of roses, but, there's reasons for that.
Lots of different plants.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is with your clientele, they, were paying, I'd say a reasonable amount to be in that particular retirement home.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are sort of pretty nice.
Yeah.
And then also, so you had that client, or also you had the other, basic clients that just wanted the job done cheap and quick.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, how do you please
either
them?
Way,
yeah.
It's just a disaster. It's a toxification, nightmare, really, as far as I can see. But, that's how you make money. So, it's got to be good, right? So, shall we talk about something nicer than that? And head into the Herb of the Week.
Of all the saddest words that I have ever heard, the saddest is a story told me by a bird. You'd spend about an hour chatting with a flower.
Salvia elegans. Do you know what that is, Selena?
Pineapple sage.
Oh, my gosh, you're such a geek. Yes, correct. 10 out of 10. It's also known as tangerine sage, and the reason I picked this is because... it's still flowering so beautifully in our community garden. My one at home, my neighbour savaged it because it was against the fence line. I think they just cut all the roots and, it's gone. But it's so easy to take cutting of.
Yep.
What's the word for that again?
Propagation.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking of that word, but yes, that would work nicely. So it is grows about 1.5 metres tall. It's got tubular red flowers, which, by the way, are just still blossoming at the moment. So beautiful. They're like little trumpets almost, aren't they?
Yeah.
So cute with a little, funnel at the end there. And a scent similar to... a scent to the leaves similar to pineapple. And it actually does, don't you think?
Yeah.
I think.
Oh, yeah.
I get that. It's regarded as a short day plant because its flowering season is from autumn onwards, which is why we're talking about it now. A hard frost of the plant will make it die down to the ground and then it will grow back the following spring. So just a little information here on how it was used extensively once in the Mexican traditional medicine world. It was used for the treatment of anxiety and it was also used for the lowering of blood pressure. Although scientific information about these medicinal properties is scarce. However, a preliminary study on mice found support for the plant potentially having antidepressant and anti-anxiety properties.
Oh, I wonder how they tested that.
That's exactly what I thought.
Get depressed.
I don't know, man. Number of my friends have pets that are depressed, apparently. I had to look after a friend's dog and was popping pills down it.
So anyone who's got a depressed mouse, give it pineapple sage.
Give it a go. It's one of the most preferred plants of hummingbirds, and butterflies also love it. So if you've got a few swan plants in your garden, they're easy to look after. Chuck a pineapple sage plant next to it. Also easy to look after.
Well, mine's in the corner of my backyard where the swan plants are growing too.
Oh, perfect.
So, yeah.
Did you plan that?
No, they just grew like that.
Oh, perfect. Well, there you go.
Really good.
And it's such a beautiful colour, that flower. I think there's only one colour. The fuchsia colour. Bright pink.
To me, it looks red.
Yeah. Well, it could be in the red family.
Okay.
Sure. Why not?
Yeah.
Cover all bases. So if you clip your pineapple sage leaves, you can use them in summer beverages like herbal teas or cocktails, or muddled with lime juice or chopped on a fruit salad. And the red flowers are also edible and are nice both visually and gastronomically when tossed into a green salad.
Wonderful.
I've got to do more of that with my flowers.
Yes.
Yeah, I
Use
need
some
to
more.
Focus Wonderful. On using flowers more in my salads because they're yummy too.
Mm.
So, Selena, tell us something. What have you been reading, Gunnan-wise? Because I know you've had a few days off work with the flu.
Okay. So one book that is just being released this year, I haven't started getting into yet because I just want to savour it. It's called The Meaning of Trees by Robert Vennell.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the history and use of New Zealand native plants. And I've been getting into Rongonga Māori medicine. And
it's
really a useful thing to learn because it tells you all about the native plants and their properties. It's got
mm-hmm.
beautiful, gorgeous pictures, some of the history about it, what it can be used
Those
for.
Those pictures are gorgeous. It's such a shame the listeners can't see.
Yeah. So
I think you should put one of those pictures up on the website.
Yeah, I'll definitely... give you the links to that.
It's gorgeous hardcover book, listeners.
Just the blurb on the back says, it's a treasure trove of unique, bizarre and wonderful plants. The Meaning of Trees explores the myriad ways in which New Zealand's extraordinary flora has been used in cuisine, crafts, medicine and culture, providing everything from seafaring canoes and tasty treats to medical marvels and sacred objects. Once you learn the stories behind these fascinating plants, the bush will never look the same again.
Mm, must have.
Last week I talked about the kowhai tree, and yes, there is an entry in there for that.
Yeah.
And it has a legend associated with the kowhai tree.
Yeah. What's that?
So there was a tohunga that was courting a girl,
mm-hmm.
and she wouldn't like, she was like... quite hard to get.
Uh-huh. Playing it hard to get.
Yeah. And she said, oh, unless you, like, show me a miracle,
yeah,
I might not go out with you. So the miracle the tohunga did was he got this kowhai tree and it was all barren, no leaves.
Yeah.
And then it put on this wonderful showy display of yellow kowhai flowers.
Oh, wow.
And that was the miracle that made the girl fall in love with him. So.
I wonder if that's because it's a short day plant.
Oh, I don't know. But, yeah, that is the legend of the kowhai tree. So, yeah, really good book. Mm-hmm. So keep an eye out for it and probably for sale in the bookstores. So The Meaning of Trees by Robert Vennell.
And was that released this year?
Well, it's a brand new book.
Yeah, it looks pretty new.
By HarperCollins.
Okay.
Yeah, but first published 2019.
Wow,
so
that's going to have some amazing. Really cool information in there.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing that, Selena.
Yeah. And other gardening books, I often just look at magazines.
Yeah.
New Zealand Gardener, Kiwi Gardener.
Yeah. I've been reading Organic New Zealand.
Yes, that's a really good magazine.
From the Soil and Health Association. Super reading in that. Yeah, it makes me feel quite inadequate as a gardener when I read about some of the things that people get up to. Amazing, eh?
Yeah,
some talented gardeners out there.
Yeah.
But really good ideas, some great recipes and, you know, just really forward-thinking articles and, you know, how we can safely, you know, garden and make the world a better place.
Yeah, props to Soil and Health Association. They've been going for many, many years and really promoting organic practices.
So that's well worth, if you're into that kind of thing, guys, well worth a read. You can pick up that magazine for $8.90. I think it comes out every month.
Yeah.
Mm.
Okay, that's all we have time for. I just want to say, thanks for sharing all about those companion plants, Karen.
Oh, hope I didn't bamboozle you all with all that technical stuff,
well,
but it was, you can't really avoid it. It is. Plants are technical. Goodness.
We're Auckland, we're diverse, so, you know, the more plants, the better.
I reckon, totally. Yeah, and more companions, the better.
Yeah, everyone needs friends.
Absolutely.
Happy gardening, everyone, and we'll be back next week.
Take care, guys.
Well, thanks for listening, everyone. That's all we have time for. Come back next week for more great gardening tips at Garden Planet. You can find us on Facebook on our Garden Planet Facebook page or email us at gardenplanetfm@gmail.com if you want to ask us anything about gardening. Happy gardening, everyone, and we'll be back next week.